You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Laurie Siegel's latest novel, Half the Kingdom, takes place mostly in a hospital where any 62-plus-year-old who enters winds up with Alzheimer's disease. Patients, caretakers, and visitors alike are all affected by the environment in the same way. They literally lose their minds. Is it the chaos of the hospital, something in the food, a terrorist plot, a psychosomatic condition, or are all older Americans just a little bit crazy anyway? And is Cedars of Lebanon, Manhattan, just the right place to let go? Her novel is published by Melville House, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Laurie Siegel back to our show. Hello.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Don't you think that Alzheimer's might be the most dreaded possible diagnosis to aging people and their families, much more than physical ailments or the disabilities, and yet you're writing a comic novel about it?
Oh, well, if I'm not comic about it, how should I take it? It would be too hard to not laugh.
In the book, it's suggested that it could be the result of a terrorist plot. What would the terrorists be trying to do to us?
Well, what the terrorists would be trying to do is, it's a double whammy. You take your 62 pluses, you drive them crazy, but you heal them of their fatal diseases, and then you can imagine having down the road, a West that is populated by, as one of the characters proposes, by heart-healthy, demented centenarians.
How would terrorists infect people with a non-infectious ailment?
You can only imagine that if, like my character, Joe Bernstein, you are yourself crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I assume the reader will understand that these are the imaginations of somebody who is himself infected by the general decline.
Did you hesitate at all to use Alzheimer's as a plot device in a darkly comic novel? Some people might not be able to laugh at it.
Well, I moderated it. I called it a copycat Alzheimer's. It isn't Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. Alzheimer's is just, as you say, the word we all dread, and I wanted something that we all dread. But I just meant, I meant to include my own inability to remember names and the whole loss of agility, of mental agility, all the way down to the.
Well, you're 85 years old, and most people, once they pass a certain age, and maybe it is 62, I don't know exactly when it is, start worrying about the possibility of Alzheimer's.
Well, we do indeed. What interested me is the fact that that medical science has given us 10, 20 more years of life, but they have not been able to keep us mentally sane.
And you mentioned that every time you forget something, we immediately think, oh, boy, I wonder if this is Alzheimer's.
That's what it's about. That's what's happening. It's not that everybody has Alzheimer's, but it is exactly that fear that I was talking about. You've got it.
Haven't we met all these characters in this book before in your previous novels?
Some of them. Many of them.
Do you have a stock company that you rely on the way that some repertory theater groups do?
They just keep coming back. I mean, Ilka is my alter ego, or my left rib. There's no intention, except I rely on my memory that Kafka's K keeps coming back. So K is somebody you write stories about. Ilka is somebody you write novels about.
So when you start writing and you just need a character, you think, well, why not just go back to one of the people I created in the past?
You know, I don't think they just walk in the door.
Well, you mentioned Joe Bernstein. He has been diagnosed with a terminal illness in this book, and when he's given the news, instead of asking the doctors how long he has to live, he says, the tree will continue to fall in the forest.
Yeah, but he's a jokester. He's somebody who lives and keeps himself going by jokes. But he's, of course, also the person who cannot bear a frightening movie, who cannot bear the suspense of some junky movie that he wants to turn it off. And I know somebody like that, and it's me.
Well, he actually has a situation like that with his adult daughter, Bethy, She's watching, they're watching a film on TV where a man in a tux goes out on a window ledge and he begs her to turn it off. Is it easier to picture the end of the world than a man falling off of a building?
You see, that's what I think. For me, it is. I can more easily think about the disasters, the real disasters. There is a referred anxiety, and I find it harder. I don't like to go to the movies because I know they're going to make me anxious.
But the reason I asked about the end of the world is because he has started a business that catalogs the apocalypses of throughout history.
It's his way of dealing with his own... I'd say that to you. I wouldn't say that in the novel, but this is his way of dealing with the end of things. I had a friend once when we were at the Yaddo, at the artist colony of Yaddo, who said when he goes home, he has a feeling that they roll it up and put it away. And I think Joe Bernstein kind of hopes that when he dies, they'll roll up the world and put it away.
But there is also on this other level of worrying about individual tragedies, but also being able to deal with large tragedies. That goes back to that quote that is attributed to so many different people, that one death is a tragedy, 6 million is a statistic.
Yes, yes. And I have something in between. All my new and my old characters come together in the emergency room. They are a little population, something between 1 and 6 million.
Now, do these characters stay in your head even between books, or do they just pop up again when you start writing?
I think they just pop up, yeah. I've never asked myself that question, but now that you ask it, yes, they just pop up.
Because some writers have talked to me, told me that they finish a book, and just because it was the end and the manuscript was handed in doesn't mean that this character who they'd lived with for so many years was gone. The character was still there, still talking to them at times, continuing to live, and they had a choice of doing another book with them or... trying to get rid of them.
It's very nice. I wouldn't say that that's me.
Laurie Siegel's latest novel is Half the Kingdom. It is published by Melville House. Some of the reviews have said that the medical system is perhaps the antagonist here. The awful layout of the hospital, the kind of care that's given, the endless torturous treatments, and the indifference of many of the providers. And we can discuss the many failures of most hospitals and doctors. But to be fair, in working to extend people's lives, isn't the medical industry just trying to give its customers what they want?
Oh, I think so. And I'm grateful for the extra 10 or 20 years that I seem to be having. I thank them.
You could have died younger?
Couldn't I? Yes.
Well, I don't know.
I could not be here, and I very much like to be here. But I do also notice that it gives us 10 or 20 more years in which to fail. I think people want, people are anxious, and people want to hear me beat up on the medical system. It's really not what I'm doing. I do beat up on much smaller issues, for instance, the privacy notices. It's fun to make fun of the privacy notices, which we all sign and don't read.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise,
we don't get the thing.
Yes, yes. You sign here. Should I read it? Oh, no, you don't have to read it. Just sign.
Well, I trust Google. But you said that medical profession... has played a role in extending your life. Your mother, I think,
lives
in the genes. She lived till she was 101. Isn't it a genetic thing?
Probably so. She got 100, and her mind was more or less intact, pretty much intact.
My experience is that as you age, the decade ahead of you starts to look younger and younger. Your book ends with a standoff. One of your characters is trying to decide whether or not to take out a breathing tube, and there's a standoff involving who blinks first. Is it unfair to ask people to be potentially complicit in their own death, in their own demise?
Well, I think it is done these days to include the patient in the decision-making. And I think I was saying how impossible it is to make that decision.
Is the hospital in your book, Cedars of Lebanon, Manhattan, based on any real hospital?
Only any big monolith of a hospital that covers several blocks. No particular one.
Well, it's been pointed out often that people who go to a hospital for physical ailments or diseases find themselves at greater risk because they're surrounded by sick people.
That's not part of my experience or the complaint.
But in this case, of course, we're talking about mental illness.
Mental
and there
illness,
actually
yes.
have been a number of films about people who have gone into mental wards as investigative reporters and have been driven crazy by the experience.
Well, there's the famous Chekhov story, isn't there, where the doctor himself becomes a... Yes.
I was thinking of a Sam Fuller movie, but yes, Chekhov is a better person to cite. Someone posits the idea of copycat Alzheimer's here. Why would that be?
Oh, I think that was just my attempt to not say Alzheimer's. That was my attempt to be moderate.
You've talked about memory loss and not being able to remember the right word, but that happens to us even when we're in our 20s. We just don't worry about it then.
Yes, and that's what we say to when somebody says, "Oh, I can't remember names." All of us will say, "Oh, that happens to me all the time." We comfort each other.
But do you think that not being able to think of the right word is a problem, especially for a writer?
In writing, it's not a problem because I can just put in an asterisk and come back to it. Mm-hmm. In speech, I certainly find my language. I find that I hesitate before I start on a long sentence because I'm not quite sure I'm going to get to the end of it. I usually do, but the sense of loss of agility in speech is a tragedy.
Well, you're doing rather well.
Oh, thank you.
There's a writer in your book named Lucy, who's an old friend of Joe's, and he hires her for his new venture. What's her job?
Her job in the story?
Yes.
Her job is to have her story, which she has sent to the magazine, ignored. She is, in a sense, she's a character from my novel Lucinella, where there were two characters, young Lucinella, who's trying to get in on the whole game, Lucinella, who has her hands on the rope, and the old woman, old Lucinella, who is out of the loop. And this is Lucy come back. Her job is to go crazy, and the way she goes crazy is by starting to read her stories over the telephone to anybody who wants to listen and anybody who doesn't want to listen.
I love the observation she makes about the beat between when something happens and when the world takes notice.
I've noticed that once, looking out of my window on 72nd Street, somebody got shot, and the man was standing there with his arm out, bleeding, and people just walked back. Half an hour later, the place was crowded with onlookers and participants after everything was long over. So this scene comes from that long ago experience.
There's also a subplot when Lucy has sent a story to an author friend at a publication called The Magazine. We can only wonder what you're referring to there. And hasn't heard from him for months. Is her experience an accurate description of what happens when a writer sends something out?
Yes, editors. Listen, editors, yes. She sends a story in July, she hasn't heard yet, yes. Mm.
even a note saying, we're still considering it, or it got lost in the slush pile.
Or even we received it. And even that doesn't happen.
Most of the people in this novel, the older people, are extremely literary. The book has references to Dickens, your characters paraphrase Shakespeare, and the elevator at the job is called Marlowe. The description of the hospital is said to prove that Kafka was a slice of life writer after all. I'm sure there are a few references I even miss because they're just too embedded in the way that your characters think. Do you think that way? Do your friends think that way?
Oh, I think so. I think we all do. One of my characters says, that's past praying for. Do you know that you're quoting Shakespeare? I came across the line just the other day. We don't know when we're quoting Shakespeare.
Where does your title, Half the Kingdom, come from?
From the Grimm fairy tales. The prince and the princess have got married. They've had this wonderful wedding and inherited half the kingdom. And if they haven't died, they're living to this hour, which is the words the end, novel ends with. But I've always been amused that they only get half the kingdom. It's as if, I mean, as if the kingdom is the prize, the everything that's good in life, but we only get half of it.
And do you have a real interest in fairy tales? You've worked with Maurice Sendak, didn't you, on
a book on Grimm? I've translated the fairy tales in the book, Juniper Tree and Other Tales from Grimm, and they're very important. They're very, very present to me.
Didn't you and Sendak argue about their meaning? Do we have to look for meaning in Grimm's fairy tales?
I had my notion of what they were like. Mine was rather, because I'd read stuff about the fairy tales. Maurice Sendak cared nothing about that. He had his own wild, romantic, profound notions that were like nobody else's. I have a 1.5 hours record. See, there's a missing word of a conversation we had about them. They're wonderful conversations. They're wonderful. His ideas were wonderfully profound and unlikely.
Some of your contemporaries, like Philip Roth and Alice Munro, have announced that they have retired from writing, perhaps because those words were not coming as easily, or plots, or whatever. Both great writers. Do you ever consider giving it up?
I consider it, but I don't know how. I've been writing every morning from 8 to 1 for the last 70 years. What would I be doing if I weren't writing?
Laurie Siegel is the author of the novels Lucinella, Other People's Houses, Her First American, and the short story collection Shakespeare's Kitchen, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. She's won almost all the writing awards, and her latest book is called Half the Kingdom. It is published by Melville House. I want to thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you. It was fun.